right, this is part two of the Golovkin Lemieux pay-per-view podcast special edition, and we're gonna have Dean and Tom on later, and Dean's gonna argue a lot about Golovkin, and he will bring up Canelo, and Tom will bring up Lara, their two favorite fighters. But for right now, I've got someone a little more objective with me, and that is Adam from a swamp. You might hear the crickets in the background. And so, Adam, I wanted to find out from you. You know, you seem to be good with this sort of thing. What do you think? Like, this is a pay-per-view for Gennady Golovkin. 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago, when he made his debut against Gregor Proxka on HBO Boxing After Dark? I think that was a card where Jonathan Gonzalez miserably failed to make weight, or maybe he fought Sergey Zinzurik to a draw. Should look that up. But would you have ever thought that before that guy stepped in the ring, that Dmitry Pirog wannabe would become an HBO pay-per-view star?
Well, I mean, this is the thing about boxing, is you can seldom predict this stuff. I mean, I've always meant to write a piece about Manny Pacquiao's first appearance on HBO against LaDuaba, and he looked great in that fight and everything, but I mean, they couldn't pronounce his name. It's hilarious. In the beginning of it, they're calling him Pacquiao for the first 10 minutes of it, until Lampley finally gets it all ironed out and realizes that it's Pacquiao.
I still say his name that way.
Yeah, well, some people do. But so it's hard to predict this kind of stuff. But, you know, this is why the way that boxing tends to work in general terms, I recognize that this isn't, you know, in every single case, but the cream rises to the top, and the best fighters, the most exciting fighters, the people who have the best resumes tend to be the ones that get these sort of star tracks. And yes, there are, you know, exceptions all over the place of guys who have sort of undeserving status, or the opposite, people who deserve better status than they get. But, you know, Golovkin has gotten there because he's marched through a bunch of people in impressive fashion. And, you know, you can argue about whether or not his resume is at the level of, you know, what you would expect for somebody at the top of the middleweight division. But, you know, he's gotten there because of the way that he's fought. And, you know, it's hard to predict that stuff ahead of time, but certainly been a hell of a ride.
And it doesn't help that, one, he's got numerous catchphrases, as well as, you know, we could, you can't get around saying that Golovkin's ascension has a lot to do with HBO. No diss on Showtime. I really don't mean any diss on Showtime, but I highly doubt that if Golovkin had made his debut on Showtime and had then just stood with Showtime, I don't think this is a pay-per-view fight. HBO's marketing of Golovkin has been stellar.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has. And, you know, his marketing of himself has been stellar. You know, he controls the inside the ring stuff, and HBO controls at least some of the outside the ring stuff. You know, we talked about this before, that I think that the sort of the recipe for his success is his growing into what is potentially a pay-per-view star. I mean, we'll see how this event works out, but to me, it comes down to two factors. One is knockouts and the other is personality. And, you know, the knockouts sort of speak for themselves. Obviously, we've seen a lot of, you know, impressive displays of power, and he's just sort of mowed through a lot of the upper echelon contenders in the middleweight division. And then the personality stuff, you know, for everybody, it's different. I mean, when Mike Tyson was, you know, becoming a star and had been a star, the personality thing for him was all about intimidation. It was all about that ethos of this unstoppable force, this, you know, evil destroyer. With Golovkin, it's sort of this happy warrior, the, like, all the goofball catchphrases and stuff. You know, they've sort of cultivated that perfectly to the point where he's sort of this beloved figure, who seems like a guy who'd be really nice to have as your neighbor if you, like, needed somebody to take your garbage cans in when you were out of town on a weekend, and also somebody who would take your damn head off if you stepped in the ring with him.
Right, or, you know, somebody was robbing your house, he'd come to the rescue. Actually, you know what? Golovkin seems like the kind of guy that would call the police. He'd say that's their job.
Yeah, he seems like maybe a rule follower outside the ring.
You think that there's Borat, you know, the movie brought some attention to Kazakhstan, where before that movie, I really doubt few people, or any people really, knew that that was a country. Do you think that that movie helped Golovkin?
This might be the first time I've ever heard somebody say that the movie Borat helped make his career.
Do you think it did? Because I was thinking about that as you were saying it, and at first I was like, that's stupid, I'm not going to ask him that. But, you know, the more I think about it, did that movie prepare us for Golovkin?
I'm going to go with no. And the reason I'm going to say no is that he could have just as easily been from Turkmenistan or Ukraine or Mongolia or North Korea or something like that. And
well, he had the same North Korea. Come on.
Well, yeah, they don't let them out. But he could have been from any number of countries that people are not familiar with, and, you know, still that same recipe of knocking the hell out of people and being a goofball outside the ring would have led to this, you know, same kind of promotional push that he's gotten.
Yeah, and, you know, we call him a goofball, but I think that Golovkin has a certain charisma that very few fighters have. And, you know, if we were to look at in boxing, which fighters have the most obvious charisma? Because immediately I know, and you know this too, that all the Rigondeaux fans are going to say he's got a ton of charisma. They always come to his defense when this thing comes up. But I'm sorry, guys, he doesn't. But if we looked at the boxers with the most charisma that are just natural, that whatever they do, however they do it, whether they play the heel or you know, the face, they're getting attention for it. And obviously we have Golovkin. We have Mayweather. Broner is very charismatic. And is there anybody else? I mean, I guess
Canelo. Well, I mean, there are lots of guys who have some charisma. I mean, Paulie Malignaggi has charisma, but Paulie Malignaggi's not at the upper levels of the sport anymore.
Well, and that brings up the thing of, you know, you said earlier, the combination of that and knockouts or domination. You know, domination could help too. Andre Ward is, he's used just basically being dominant, and the same with Mayweather. Although Ward is not as charismatic as Golovkin or Mayweather, not by any stretch, or Malignaggi, but Malignaggi is missing that special ingredient that if he had that, you know, things would certainly be different.
So, I mean, that's a good case study, Andre Ward versus Gennady Golovkin. And I don't mean in a fight. I mean, as sort of pop culture figures, as sport figures, as draws, you know, Golovkin is sort of this HBO star. He's being given his first pay-per-view. Everybody's expecting a spectacular knockout and hopefully bigger fights from here. Andre Ward has been sort of muddled in this, you know, place where he's clearly one of the top, you know, handful of fighters in the world. His resume is light years better than Golovkin's in terms of who he's fought and beaten convincingly. But he's nowhere near that same kind of, you know, transcendent star. And why is that? Is it just down to charisma? I mean, Ward's certainly not a real, you know, loud, brash guy or anything like that. He's more sort of soft-spoken, intelligent. But I mean, he's, you know, he commentates on HBO all the time. His name should be known, you know, reasonably, and yet he still doesn't have that same kind of star power. So sometimes I'm not sure we really can put our finger on what it is that makes somebody, but you know, they've obviously made something out of Gennady Golovkin, and you know, we'll see what happens against Lemieux if that trajectory sort of continues.
I think Ward is known. I think there's a certain level of apathy though amongst boxing fans, because I very seldomly meet. I don't think I've ever met a casual boxing fan who doesn't know who Andre Ward is, and that is, I don't mean the casual boxing fan who knows Mayweather, Pacquiao, and the Russian guy who has a heavyweight title. I mean, you know, who watches HBO here and there. They know who Andre Ward is. And it's interesting. Andre Ward is in the same position Mayweather was in, where Mayweather was clearly establishing himself as one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the sport, if not already that at that level. And Andre Ward's at the same spot. And yet he's in the shadows with his network and with his promoter. I mean, they're not on the same promotional banner the way Mayweather and De La Hoya were. And this is at this point, you know, somewhere at this point, although not, the ages didn't line up, Mayweather underwent a transformation to get the recognition he deserved. Now, I highly doubt that Andre Ward does that. The guy has a lot of pride. And, you know, just the way he fights, he's a stubborn guy. I don't think that's happening. At the same time, though, it's interesting. If Ward wanted to, he could easily play the villain role and start to draw massive ratings, just because you know what Golovkin needs now? He needs a villain.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe we've sort of put our finger on as close as it gets to an explanation of what the issue with Andre Ward is. He's just as dominant inside the ring as, you know, well, maybe not just as dominant, but close to, as Floyd Mayweather is.
No, he's a little more dominant.
But, well,
I'm
maybe.
I'm kidding. Okay. It's up for debate.
Yeah, if you look at some competition. But, no, I mean, so he's clearly, you know, on that level of dominance inside the ring. And the real difference there is outside the ring. And the thing with somebody like Golovkin is he has an in-ring style that draws in those casual viewers that, you know, that's the kind of thing that ends up on SportsCenter highlights and that people talk about, that you see, you know, GIFs floating around on Twitter and stuff like that. You don't see GIFs of Andre Ward's amazing, you know, smothering infighting style showing up on Twitter. Like that's not a thing that happens. And so he doesn't really have that in-ring style to get him there. And he doesn't really have that out-of-ring sort of brashness or whatever it is that makes people pay attention. But with Golovkin, you know, he's got this sort of, he's in this interesting place, kind of where Manny Pacquiao was, I think, for a while, where people think of him as a killer inside the ring and as this nice sort of, you know, happy, warm, fuzzy guy outside the ring. And we'll see if he maintains that a little better than maybe Pacquiao did.
Well, if history tells us anything, it's that if they're in the same position, and you know, they're really similar, Mayweather and Ward, defensive fighters, Olympic pedigrees, their style isn't particularly pleasing to watch, but they're extremely dominant with what they do. And Golovkin blasts through people, happy-go-lucky, the same way Manny Pacquiao was. But when they meet, and time again, we learn that the defensive fighter and the defensive style usually beats the aggressive fighter. It's very rare when the aggressive fighter can burst through and get past a defensive fighter. Usually you have to have Texas judges on your side or even the Las Vegas judges.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think that Golovkin has more of those wrinkles to his game. He just doesn't really use that style very much. He's sort of cultivated this style of the, you know, the destroyer who relies on his power. I'd like to think that he's smart enough and resourceful enough, and given his amateur pedigree, has enough skill to fall back on, that if he really did get in with an Andre Ward or somebody like that, that he could fight that more sort of patient, balanced attack than, you know, a lot of other brawlers end up doing when they get in against a master boxer, somebody who has a defensive style. But, you know, this is like when we're talking about the fight with Lemieux, you know, none of those wrinkles are going to be a part of this fight, I don't think. Everybody expects that it's just going to be a slugfest of the highest order. And, you know, he's the best at the slugfest at this point.
Do you buy into that this is going to be a slugfest?
I do. And it's not really because of Golovkin. It's because of Lemieux. I don't really think that David Lemieux has much else in him other than just trying to take people's heads off. And he's had some success at that, but that's sort of been his style. And you know, he's had enough success at that recently that I think he's probably sort of bought into his power and that style being something that works for him. And so I do think that there's a worry that it's been built up so much as, you know, Hagler Hearns part two, that it might fail to meet expectations to some degree, but I don't expect this to be any kind of a, you know, technical boxing match. I mean, there might be some feeling out, but at some point these guys are going to throw.
You don't think Lemieux's going to try a jab or two?
I mean, he might try one or two before he just abandons it and steps in there. But yeah, I mean, neither of these guys have much of that style in their recent background. And I don't think that either of them are thinking they're going to walk into this and box their way to a decision victory. You know, Golovkin has, I think he's smart enough to know that his mystique is built on him knocking people out. And David Lemieux, while a good opponent and a dangerous opponent in some ways, is somebody that people expect him to knock out. And if he goes in there and just sort of pity-pats his way to a 12-round decision, that's going to derail the Golovkin hype train somewhat. And, you know, on the flip side, Lemieux knows that he's walking in against this famed destroyer, and you know, he's not likely to sort of outbox the guy who has that kind of amateur pedigree. And the way for him to win is basically to test that chin in a way that, you know, only very briefly Curtis Stevens or the feather-fisted Willie Monroe have before. That's his recipe. So that's why I think we're probably going to see maybe not the world's biggest firefight, but, you know, it's going to be a slugfest to some degree.
How shocked would you be if Golovkin went down?
Oh, I wouldn't be that shocked. I mean, people, you know, we build up these myths of fighters as though they're untouchable. I know that people say, you know, Golovkin's never been down in the amateurs or the pros, and I don't really have reason to doubt that. But listen, this is boxing. You know, there's no 4-run home run in baseball. There's no 4-pointer in basketball. There's no.
There actually is a 4-run home run. In baseball.
Well, a five-run home run. Sorry. forgive my retardation for a moment. But, you know, there is in boxing. There's an equalizer. And, you know, I don't care how iron-chinned you are. If you get that perfect shot landed on you by a hard puncher like David Lemieux, and he's one of the hardest punchers, you know, in the middleweight division without a doubt, you know, that he could go down. Now, do I think that he's going to viciously knock Golovkin out? I don't really think so. I think the odds are pretty low, but it wouldn't blow me away to see it.
Yeah, there's a such thing as a 4-run home run in baseball.
Yeah, and if some people had their way, there would be a 4-pointer in basketball, but we're not there yet.
Might be interesting. You ever see the list of rules for the North Korean basketball?
I can't say that I have, no.
They're ridiculous. Like there's negative points, there's 4-point points. I think if you miss a free throw, it's -1. I think blocks are worth a point. You just get ridiculous scores at the end, and then somehow it works.
Unlike anything else in North Korea, somehow it works.
Did you watch Flanagan?
I did.
What did you think of Magdaleno's footwork?
It was the fanciest kind of footwork I've seen in a long time. I've never seen somebody do the splits several times in the middle of a fight. But
he was fighting in bowling shoes.
Yeah, well, and it looked like he got hit with a bowling ball on a couple of those uppercuts. Good Lord. But yeah, it was a hell of an interesting fight.
At some point we're going to have to figure out what you mean by interesting.
It's a clever way of saying really, really bad. Also, you know, I could say that Magdalena's hair was interesting, which is also just a way of saying really, really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what was going on and what Joel Diaz had in mind for that fight. Just a bizarre fight and just disappointed because I wanted Terry Flanagan to lose.
Really? Why?
No reason, really.
You just wanted to see his O go away?
Correct. Bring that title back over here.
Or is it because it was in Manchester and you wanted to screw with Dean?
Nah, you know what? Dean, for some reason, isn't a fan of Terry Flanagan. He's a fan of other Manchester fighters and supports them, but does not have not much of a fan of Terry Flanagan for some reason.
Maybe it's because they look so alike.
Ooh. Well, we'll leave it at that. We're going to bring on Dean next. He won't hear that comment until after.
He's going to say I'm ducking him. You can book it. How many times is he going to say I duck him? I put the over under at like 4.5.
That's probably too low.
Place your bets now, everybody.
Take the over. He's going to be quite angry. Thanks for coming on, Adam. Enjoy your
my crickets and my non-baseball watching.
Yeah. I mean, at least there's a lot of boxing on this week. I'm sure you're excited.
And you know, here's what I'm not excited about. Here's a note to close it out on. I have to go to a wedding this weekend. And so I'm going to be in a wedding when Golovkin is fighting, and not just any wedding, but I have to officiate the wedding. And so it's not even like I can be sitting there pulling something up on my phone or paying attention or whatever. Like, who's I'm just going to have to straight up watch this on bootleg Daily Motion clips the day after.
Who's fighting?
Who's officiating? What? This weekend?
What are you officiating?
Oh, no, no, no. I'm officiating the wedding. I have to marry people.
What is that? Like, you're the priest?
Well, in a manner of speaking, I'm an ordained minister in the Universal Life Church, which I did at the click of one button of my mouse, and therefore I am now legally entitled to marry two of my friends in the state of Florida.
All right, well, if you ever need somebody to marry you, let us know. You can send us emails or follow us on Twitter and send us messages. Adam will marry you.
Yeah, for a small fee on non-boxing major event days, perhaps. But this one, I'm taking one for the team.
All right, Adam, thanks for coming on. Now on to Dean and Tom. A bit of false advertising. I actually have only Tom here. Dean was supposed to come on, but he was very ill and doesn't think I know the difference between ibuprofen and Advil. So he's sitting at home sick, and right now it's just Tom from China. Tom?
Hi.
All right, and Tom, before we get into Golovkin versus Lemieux, which we're going to do a little later, let's just run through the list of fights from this past weekend and the ones we've got coming up. So Flanagan versus Magdaleno. We got into this a little bit earlier, but did you expect to see that from Terry Flanagan?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I didn't expect it to be so short and so extreme. I did expect Flanagan to win, but I certainly did not expect it to be over so quickly. Magdaleno looked completely lost, and well, I think I said this to you over the net earlier. He looked like a giraffe from roller skates. The guy had absolutely no balance, and every time he got touched, he was wobbled. And
yeah,
in two rounds, it was done and dusted.
You know what I'm starting to think is that we've all kind of had a incorrect view, I think, of Terry Flanagan, because after a Stephen Orman fight where it ended in a disqualification, Flanagan looked pretty limited in that fight. And since that point, he's ripped out Jose Zepeda's arm and then knocked out Diego Magdaleno. Is Flanagan actually good? Not if you ask Sky, apparently. He's the fifth or sixth best British lightweight in the world. But to you, Tom, is Flanagan actually good?
He's certainly not bad.
Not bad. Okay. You couldn't say that about Magdaleno's footwork. And Liam Smith, there's a theme for this podcast, and that's that gay people are not okay. And we're going to reach this with Liam Thompson, who was previously in trouble for beating up the gays. Now, we obviously don't support that. And I think it's quite shocking that Liam Smith, someone who got in trouble with the law for doing a bit of gay bashing, now holds a world title after knocking out John Thompson. Again, just like Flanagan, did you expect Liam Smith to win that one?
Well, let's just make a quick distinction. What happens inside the ring is not necessarily parallel to the ethical views of the boxers taking part, right? So, Liam Smith went in there with some disreputable views and so on, but what he did was waited around for two or three rounds, probably lost the first two rounds in my personal opinion, and then turned it on, got the job done, and it was a surprise how quickly he turned it around, I guess.
Well, I saw it from the opening round. I mean, I think the first punch he landed was one of those overhand rights. And when Thompson couldn't do anything, that punch was so telegraphed and Thompson took it so easily, or well, he didn't take it easily, he just took it. I was like, okay, fine. There's no way Thompson's winning. I saw the writing on the walls really early. And, you know, congratulations to Liam Smith for, you know, being a world champion before any of his other brothers could grab a world title. Who would have thought Liam Smith would be the first Smith to grab a title and not Callum or even Steven, who I think is chinny, but I've always thought he was a little underrated.
Well, I did enjoy your write-up where you said Liam Smith is the second or third best boxer from the Smith family.
That's still true, I think. I think Paul Smith is a little better.
Yeah, no, I like that as well. And, of course, we got Callum Smith coming up soon against, is it Rocky Fielding, I think?
Yep, Rocky Fielding. And that's going to be a tough one, November 7th. Fielding looked very good last time out, and Callum obviously has the pedigree. He's had, you know, close to 20 fights now where he's looked very good, and he's been tested against good opposition. But let's jump back onto the fights for this week. So tonight, Devin Alexander, another one with an unfortunate choice of words and timing for when he wanted to spout off his own personal views on people's sexuality or sexual preferences. He's going to face Aaron Martinez. And the shocking thing here, and I'm sure you are probably just as perplexed as I am, is that Devin Alexander got a headlining fight on ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports, according to them. Post those comments after, you know, the comments he posted on Twitter.
Well, I didn't care much for Devin Alexander before those comments.
Oh, really? Why not?
I just think he's dull as dishwater.
Dull as dishwater.
But so I'm on
the guy whose favorite fighter is Arislandi Lara is calling Devin Alexander dull.
Arislandi Lara is a tour de force in entertainment.
You'd have to explain yourself here.
maybe on another cast, right? But I'm just looking through Aaron Martinez's recent fights, and it's kind of horrible. Lost to Robert Guerrero, lost to Josecito Lopez, and then
stopped by Josecito Lopez on ESPN. Yeah, well, by the way,
yeah, five in the fifth, yeah, TKO in the fifth, and then Jesse Vargas lost unanimous decision. So can this guy beat Devin Alexander?
It's a tall order, but let's put one thing out there first. Aaron Martinez at worst should have gotten a draw against Robert Guerrero. He dropped Guerrero. He took advantage of Guerrero's, and he's really the first one since, apart from Mayweather, he was really the first one to really just show people this is how bad Guerrero has gotten or is. Guerrero's defense wasn't there, and Martinez punished him. Martinez pushed a pace that Guerrero couldn't keep up with. And it's funny because Guerrero's usually the kind of guy, he pushes the pace. And the question here is, can Martinez push the pace? Can Martinez keep his activity up enough that he can bother Alexander? Now, in the past, we've seen that the way to beat Alexander isn't, you know, to pressure him. Maidana and Matisse both tried to pressure Alexander and have both really failed. The only exception to that rule is, well, I guess it's a different kind of pressure, because Porter and Bradley, with the exact same game plan of smothering and pressuring Alexander, were able to beat him. But the thing that they had going for them was they were quick. I don't think Martinez is as quick as Bradley or Porter.
Right, so I'm noticing you're not mentioning Amir Khan.
Well, because he had a different game plan. He was able to outbox him from the outside, and he did that lunging in and out and using speed.
Yeah, so...
And it was a particularly boring fight, so I forgot about it.
Well, it certainly was that, yeah.
And do we have to bring up Amir Khan every week?
Yeah, probably.
It doesn't do us any good. Well, I mean, at least Dean's not on, because then that's when hate mail comes in about, you know, being overly critical of Amir Khan. But if we're going to get on that subject, if we're going to get on that subject, I just want to say that how does this guy still get taken seriously for calling out everybody and their mother and saying things like Pacquiao and Mayweather are ducking him?
No, he's retiring everyone through calling them out.
Well, yeah. Or he's been so severely concussed throughout his career that this guy speaks nonsense and somehow people out there actually buy into what he's got to say.
He's in Doha at the moment watching the amateur boxing championships. If he calls out any of those guys, I reckon they're just going to quit. He's already retired Mayweather through calling him out, and he's going to retire Pacquiao soon by calling him out.
He should call out James Toney and, you know, put that one to bed.
Yeah, it'd be a good ethical decision.
Use his powers for good. Lee Selby's going to fight on the undercard.
And, yeah, I'm excited about that. I really want to watch.
Now, why are you excited about Lee Selby?
Well, because I'm a little bit undecided.
I thought it was because he was the Welsh Mayweather. You are of Walesian descent.
Yeah, I'm half Welsh, so obviously I naturally go towards these Welsh fighters. Lee Selby, I hear good and bad things about Lee Selby, but what I'm really interested in is... we saw him... Well, destroy is the wrong word, but absolutely outbox Evgeny Gradovich, right?
Yep.
And that was over in 8. And it went to the cards. Did it go to the cards? Technical decision.
Yeah, it was a technical decision.
So, I just want to see him continue in this fashion. And Fernando Montiel, I'm not sure whether I'm pronouncing that correctly.
But, no, that's great. You finally pronounced something correctly.
Yeah, so, I mean, this guy's... He's not going to be a stick in the mud. He's going to give Selby a challenge, at least. And also, this is Selby's first fight in America, I think.
I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
The last time Montiel fought outside of Mexico, however, he got knocked out by Donaire. Brutally.
Yeah, but was that 2012 Donaire?
You mean it was probably 2011 Donaire, the Donaire
2011 Donaire. Yeah, exactly.
That was just unstoppable.
Yeah, that's a fighter which you can isolate in time, right?
Not exactly, because you could make the case, though, that Montiel had no business being at that division, that Donaire was a huge super bantamweight. I believe it was a super bantamweight at the time. And he was fighting a little small super flyweight who had jumped up all the way to bantamweight at the time. It was bantamweight. No business really being there. Now, obviously, Montiel had been at bantamweight for a while, but, you know, Montiel's not the biggest guy, and how he's going to fight at featherweight and try to beat a guy like Lee Selby, who's going to be much bigger than him. I mean, Selby has 4.5 inches of height on him. Selby's not a big puncher.
You're not wrong, actually. Jesus. Yeah,
but and Montiel, he's got small arms. He's gonna try to fight inside. I don't like his chances with that strategy against Lee Selby, who excels at the inside, and he showed when he fought Gradovich that if you want to come inside on him, you're gonna pay the price.
Yeah, but all good points. The other thing with regards Selby, though, is so, obviously, he won a title against Gradovich, and that kind of cements him as being somewhat world level. We don't know his ceiling yet, do we?
Okay.
And he has to destroy Montiel.
He does. I mean, if he wants to really make that impact in America.
Yeah. I mean, this is the perfect match for Selby. It's the perfect exhibition would be the wrong word. But if, as you're saying, you know, this fella is coming up to fight Selby, and Selby, as you said, 4.5 inches of height minimum on him, you know, then Selby's just going to have to do what he's always done and, well, basically work on the outside to begin with. If Montiel comes inside, he's going to have to use that game plan as well. And he's going to have to destroy him.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned something interesting, and I want to just play with this a little bit. So, is Lee Selby world level? And I know a lot of people are ranking him highly, and just people that are sky high on Lee Selby. Fair enough. But check this out, okay? The IBF title. Let's just trace the IBF title. So, Selby won the IBF title by beating Evgeny Gradovich. Gradovich, however, was just a prospect when he won that title. He won that title from Billy Dibb, and Gradovich stepped in as a late replacement and got, a win over Dibb that was very close. And before that, Dibb got the title it was vacant. Gamboa had vacated it, or actually he lost it on the title, or not on the title, on the scales. So Dibb wins this vacant title, and then he goes on to lose to Gradovich, who then loses to Lee Selby. Gradovich coming off of a draw prior to his fight with Lee Selby. So is beating Gradovich that big of a deal? I don't think so. You could make the case. I think Selby is good, but if you were out to make that case that Selby's not a world-level fighter and we don't know anything about him yet, and Montiel will certainly not prove anything, you're not wrong.
No, but the thing you have to bear in mind is that just like many other boxers that I've talked about with you before, you can only fight the people that are put in front of you, right? And Selby is not failing in that, right? So Billy Dibb, yeah, sure. Evgeny Gradovich beat Billy Dibb to get the title. Lee Selby destroyed Gradovich. Okay, so at the very least, he's beaten the guy he was holding a title, which is, it's of note, it's a good title. And at this point, you have to bear in mind, it's not like Selby has ducked anyone to get there. He just went for the option that was available to get a world title, which no one can really take away from him, And at that point, you have to think about, okay, so what are the available options for him? Well, he's just signed Heyman. So he's just moved over to PBC, at which point you have to kind of analyze his possible options. You don't want Selby to go out there and lose to one of the other title holders live on PBC on his opening event. So you're getting another guy who, is a name. Montiel is a name, right? And you expect Selby to win that one. And I think in one or two fights down the line, we'll be able to see Selby's ceiling. And I think what you'll see is that he's world level. He's definitely not elite, or at least it's certainly not proved that he's an elite level, but he is. He belongs in the mixer with these kind of world level challengers, elite level boxers at the very least.
No, I'm not going to dispute that, and you'd be stupid to dispute that, but do I think that you can make the case that Lee Selby is not a world level fighter? That case can be made. But there's a better case you can make for not being world level if we talk about the Andrzej Fanfara versus Nathan Cleverley fight. So Fanfara's gotten a lot of recognition in the past year for doing a couple of things that I think fans saw as a favor to them more so than, Fanfara doing good for his career. That was first dropping Adonis Stevenson and then, being competitive for a quarter of that fight. Then it was brutally stopping and forcing a quit out of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Yeah, but...
And then, people forget. I would be shocked if anybody out there could name the other guy that Fanfara has fought in the past year without looking it up. So the point... And then he's facing Nathan Cleverley. And this fight has implications on the WBC title that Adonis Stevenson holds. And what has cleverly done in the past year?
What do you mean, what has cleverly done in the past year? Everyone saw him win an absolutely brilliant first round knockout in a single punch.
It literally was. The punch stats for that fight was one punch thrown, one punch landed, and that was it.
That's 100%.
Mayweather's jealous of that.
I know.
And so now we have Nathan Cleverley. And that was also his first fight back down from Cruiserweight, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So.
Thomas Mann.
Thomas. Yeah, poor guy.
Thomas Mann, yeah.
Only guy ever to lose, landing zero punches in a fight, throwing zero punches in a fight. I mean, there was total one fight, one punch thrown that whole fight.
Yeah, it's 24 seconds.
Yeah.
It's a bit late, I'd imagine. Anyway, so why the hell did Cleverley take this fight?
I have no clue. He had Jürgen Bramer, however you want to say his name, Bramer. He had him. It was there. All he had to do was just go to Germany and fight Bremer. For Bremer's title, easy fight. I think Cleverley could actually take that too. I don't think it's
was that fight actually available to him?
Yeah, they were negotiating it. I remember that they were trying to work on that fight.
So he's chosen from Fara in America against
in a Bremer. Very Polish area.
Yeah, for the international light heavyweight title as opposed to. Like a fully fledged title in Germany.
Well, technically, it's not a real title. It's a certificate title. But at the same time, you can say, I'm a world champion. And that if he would won that, you cleverly be able to say, I'm a two-time world champion. But now he's going to come to America and fight a big light heavyweight who may or may not have failed a drug test at one point in his career.
May or may not, yeah.
You'd have to do your own research there.
Well, as someone that is half Welsh, I'm looking forward to cleverly knocking out Fonfara. As someone that has watched boxing before, I know that poor Nathan is going to go over there and have a very long journey home.
Yeah, I do watch boxing, and I can tell you that Fonfara is better at boxing than Cleverley.
Yeah, precisely.
And look, we're going to get through this fight without using any clever puns. Koki Kameda is going to be on the undercard against Kohei Kono. And if you read my preview, I'm going to basically repeat everything I said there. And I'm going to do it real quick. Koki Kameda is Japan's Adrian Broner. His whole family got banned from Japan. They cannot box there no more. License is revoked. Promotional company, which is technically called their gym over there. No more sanctioning for you. So they're here. Kohei Kono's like a domestic super flyweight, and Kameda's actually dropping down from bantamweight to fight this fight. And it'll be interesting. I really hope he does some and shows some of the antics that made him the most popular fighter in Japan here, because he could use it. Fighting at super flyweight on Spike TV on Friday night isn't exactly doing yourself a big favor if you're trying to draw some attention to yourself. All right, so Saturday.
Well, okay.
Oh, go ahead. You got something to say on this?
Yeah, no. So I just want to go back to the Japanese fight. Okay, so how did the Kamedas lose their license? Because what I've read is somewhat different to what I've heard elsewhere and from you as well. So what I heard was that one of the Kameda brothers lost a decision, a split decision, and the gym, whatever the gym constitutes, decided to take hostage one of the judges. Is that? I'm not making that up. That's what I've read. Like, is that complete bollocks?
That is not something that I've read, but it kind of makes sense for the. It makes sense given the punishment that they've given. But this goes back way further than that fight. And the fight you're talking about is Daiki Kameda, who's the younger brother, I believe. Or no, the middle brother. Right. His fight with Liborio Solis, where Solis misses weight and proceeds to beat Kameda. The IBF, and it was a unification fight, so one of the sanctioning bodies, rightly so, stripped. Kameda had the belt, and they stripped him, and the belt went vacant. But the IBF, instead of doing the logical thing and just stripping Kameda, instead let him keep the belt, despite losing the fight, simply because Solis had failed to make weight. Now, that was just the final straw. If they kidnapped the judge, well, that certainly makes a lot of sense. But I really don't urge them to try that with Al Haymon. But anyway, that's just the long line. You know, the Kamedas are controversial. Koki is very flamboyant. He's, you know, like I said, like the Adrian Broner over there. And in the past, I think Daiki got in trouble, or it might have been Koki. One of them got in trouble for throwing elbows and doing wrestling moves in the ring. Another one got, I think, I can't remember if it was Koki or Daiki. It's always them two. Tomoki's been very, you know, well-behaved. One of them was urging the other guy in the corner to throw elbows in a fight. And it would be like Vitaly telling Vladimir during the Fury fight or any fight, you know, he's had recently to elbow him at some point. So, yeah. There's been like full-on wrestling moves in the ring between these guys, and the Japanese Boxing Commission simply had enough and said, you know, you guys are done. And if they're, I really hope that actually the kidnapping judge's story is true, because that's just special.
No, I swear I read that somewhere. I can't remember whether I'm making it up now. But either way, like, for the Kameda family, is it such a bad thing that two of their boxers are now signed to Al Haymon? It doesn't sound like it.
I think all three are signed now.
Are they? Okay, all right, all three. Either way, right, so Japan, outside of America, Japan has the largest boxing following.
You don't think Britain has a bigger one?
Per capita. I mean, like, percentage of people in the country watching. I'd anticipate that Japan is pretty much up there. Maybe Britain. I don't know. I don't know the precise statistics.
Well, it's certainly a lot.
It's huge. Yeah, so having three of their main guys over in America, besides the fact that their television times are going to be thrown off drastically, that's not a negative thing for Japanese boxing, and it's certainly not a negative thing for lower-level boxing, lower-level being lower-level weight classes. Well, so I think it's, funnily enough, a positive thing for worldwide boxing.
Well, and the other thing is that it's not like Japan is losing out on their three best fighters. You know, this isn't like Uchiyama, Yamanaka.
No, it's not.
Came over here. This is, you know, the Kamedas, and the Kamedas. Koki's a multiple-time world titleist. He held a lineal title, but he's never had a win that's really just put him amongst the elite fighters. He's had some good wins. Don't make no doubt about it, but he's not one of the top fighters in the sport or anything like that. And the same with Daiki. And Tomoki, I've always known, was a fool's gold fighter. And we just saw that, you know, Jamie McDonald exposed that.
Hold on. Did you say fool's gold fighter for Tomoki Kameda?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Because, like, I've been saying that Jamie McDonald was going to do him again.
Stop. I was the one who said that.
No. I did say that. You can check my comment history on our boxing if you want.
We'll have to look into that to test the validity of that claim.
Either way, like, I'm glad someone else agreed with me. But I've been looking forward to watching Kohei Kano. And the reason was because I just didn't know anything about him. But nevertheless, he's held this belt for a little while. Right, it's 2012, he's held this belt.
Well, he's come up short quite a few times when he's faced much lesser opposition than Kameda.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's just always entertaining to see someone that you haven't seen who actually holds one of the major belts.
It's not that major. Fine. This is not like a WBC title. This is a WBA regular.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought it was the full WBA belt. Anyway.
No, I don't think anybody holds the full WBA at super flyweight, but listen to us talking about the super flyweight division like this is the welterweight division. Let's jump onto a more popular division. A 140-pound fight. I think it's a 140-pound fight between Lamont Peterson and Felix Diaz. Diaz is a former Olympian. I believe he won a gold medal. I'm obviously not prepared for that, though, to answer that fully. And it's good to see Lamont Peterson back. He looked solid against...
Yeah, can I just stop you there? Kohei Kono has the WBA full.
Yes, but does it say super?
No, it doesn't say super, but...
That's the only fine. WBA belt I care about.
Oh, right. he has the belt which is not the interim champion belt.
He has the belt that doesn't matter.
It's as good as it gets, basically, at Superfly.
It's as good as it gets. No, the WBO belt, or is it the WBC belt? This is the WBO belt that Inoue holds. Now, that's the legit title we're going to look at when we're doing when we're looking at the super flyweight division.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Well, the only super flyweight belt that matters is the WBO Naoya Inoue, right?
Yep.
Anyway, so let's move on. What do you say again?
Lamont Peterson versus Felix Diaz. Diaz is coming off of a win against Gabriel Bracero, who we just saw knock Danny O'Connor into the third grade.
Yeah.
Diaz has had an okay career so far. He was a former Olympian. He won a gold medal at the Olympics. But his opposition so far is nothing to prepare him for a guy like Lamont Peterson. I think the last time he fought was actually on the Garcia Peterson undercard. Peterson's 2-2 in his last four fights, but I think a guy of the caliber of Felix Diaz loses to a Peterson. But, you know, this could be one of those things where, you know, things change. Diaz can easily come in and upset Peterson, and now we have another name at 140.
Right, okay. So, have you been watching the amateur boxing this week?
I haven't gotten around to it. What have you seen?
Okay. Well, I tried to watch it today, but again, Chinese internet didn't allow such a thing. So, basically, typically what you get from the amateur boxers is an incredible ability to move and not necessarily the best chin, not necessarily the best power, right?
Go on.
Go. All right. So what you're talking about is Felix Diaz, 17 wins, no losses, and so on. And he's going to face a guy like Lamont Peterson. He took Danny Garcia to all 12 rounds and just lost. He did lose, but he only just lost. And Danny Garcia, for me, is pretty much the best guy at this
in the world?
Weight. No. In the world. In and around this weight, right? So, this fight between Lamont Peterson and Felix Diaz means... I'd say it's make or break for Peterson.
Absolutely. I think this is Peterson's fight to lose. He's fighting for his career here. And Diaz could really make a step forward. You know, he's 31 years old. It's now or never. He has to come out and... If he's not going to outbox Peterson, he's got to knock him out. And if he does that, the big fights are coming for him. But he's got to look dominant against Peterson. He's got to make people believe that Peterson is fully done.
Yeah, well, you just need a quick little browse through Leif Peterson's box rec, and you see exactly how important this is to Diaz, right? So we're talking about a guy who drew to Victor Ortiz, lost to Matisse, lost to Garcia. Admittedly, the Garcia fight was close. And if this guy loses to Peterson, then you start to question his ceiling again.
No, absolutely. If Diaz loses, he's, you know, just a domestic fighter and does not deserve to be on this level.
Well,
no,
not domestic level. No. So long as domestic means country by country.
Yeah.
Because Peterson is in no way, shape, or form a domestic fighter. Peterson is a legitimate title challenger.
Let me ask you this. Does Peterson beat Sam Eggington?
Well, no one beats Sam Eggington. Well, besides the two that have already beat him, no one beats Sam Eggington.
No, that's actually 100%, 1,000% the right answer. Let's talk about Pritchard Colon versus Terrell Williams. Oh, Pritchard Colon is finally getting a test. That's the extent of that conversation, because we got to get on to Sam Eggington now. Sam Eggington is fighting Dale Evans, and this is only because Frankie Gavin pulled out of this fight because he hurt his foot. And it's real disappointing because
his foot. That's what he says.
Yeah, what was really hurt about him?
The truth is that he didn't dare go against Sam Eggington, the world's best journeyman.
He's no longer a journeyman. Sam Eggington is a legitimate contender climbing through the ranks. Like, does Eggington beat Amir Khan right now?
Oh.
I think Eggington probably knocks him out.
I think, unfortunately, Eggington loses.
No, that's no, it's impossible.
Yeah, well,
I can.
It's a close one. Well, it's not close, is it? Amir Khan beats Eggington.
No, there's no way Eggington loses to Khan. There's no way Eggington loses to Brook.
Right. I can't see that.
Look, on this podcast, Eggington does not lose. You're not a frequent guest, Tom, but you'll learn in time.
Yeah, maybe I won't get invited back unless I defend Eggington. So, yeah. Eggington is fighting who again? Is TBA?
No, it's Dale now. Evans. Dale Evans.
Dale Evans.
He works at the Kinko's in Manchester.
What do you mean?
Do you not know what a Kinko's is?
No.
It's like a photocopying place where they do like copies of papers.
Seriously?
No, I'm kidding. I just made that up.
Oh, right. Okay.
He's a vacuum repairman.
He's got a couple of losses, but overall, he looks up for a fight. No, so
which is another way to say this is like going to be. Wait a second. How are you coming up with that? He doesn't even have a picture on BoxRec.
No, he's got two losses, he's got 10 wins, and he's got two fights already in the pipeline. Sam Eggington being one, and then he moves on to John O'Donnell before he knocks out Amir Khan. That's Dale Evans we're talking about.
You know that this is actually a rematch, right? That Dale Evans has already beaten Sam Eggington?
Oh, shit, he has, yeah, he has.
Yeah, but that was a prize fighter, and I'm sure Eggington hadn't even gotten started yet, and that's why Evans was able to take the three-round decision.
Yeah, but that he weighed in at 149 in that fight, so...
So?
2 pounds over the assumed weight.
Well, that's why Eggington's going to knock him out this time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you. Sam Eggington.
Johnny Coyle's next. Right. Eggington's going off, and he's avenging all of his losses before he goes after Amir Khan.
Yeah, good.
Let's talk about Luis Ortiz versus Matias Vidondo. which is for the interim WBA heavyweight title, and that's going to be on the Golovkin-Lemieux undercard. What is there to say about this fight? It was supposed to be Luis Ortiz versus Bermain Stiverne. I think at one point, oh, really? Bryant Jennings was in the running. Luis Ortiz is a heavyweight fighter. He also failed a drug test, though.
Yeah.
About a year ago when he fought Latif Coyote. Ortiz knocked Coyote out in one round and then failed a drug test afterwards, which typically happens. If you're scoring first-round knockouts, it's probably not wise to take a drug test afterward.
Well, it depends on who's wrapping your hands and so on.
Well, that's the other option if you're in the business of first-round knockouts. But Matias Vidondo, Argentine heavyweight, does not look like boxing is the main focus in his life. Let's just leave it at that.
Right, okay.
And so also on the undercard is Turiano Johnson versus Iman O'Kane.
So can we just go back to that a second? So what's happening to Bermain Stiverne?
He's sitting at home.
So is there a reason why he's pulled out? Was he actually signed in for that fight?
Nothing was ever official. They just were in negotiation and then it fell apart.
Because I think he's got some of the best hair in boxing.
The best hair in boxing?
Yeah.
Now that's got to go to Diego Magdaleno from this past Saturday.
Okay, so I had a question for you, which I was going to save for Skype, but now you brought it up.
We are on Skype.
Are we? Oh, yeah, okay. So, Diego Magdaleno.
It's a clever way of saying his name.
Has he got a brother?
He does. Jesse Magdaleno.
And does Jesse Magdaleno have even worse hair? And did he fight around about 2 months ago?
He doesn't have worse hair, as far as I know. He did fight very recently as well. I think he fought on a UniMass undercard.
Yeah, that's
right. Or no, maybe he headlined. And Jesse's very good, I think. He's a little reckless, but I think he's good. He hasn't stepped up, and he's actually fighting this weekend, actually. But he hasn't stepped up, still hasn't stepped up in his career. And they're just taking the long road with him, probably because they've seen how his brother unfolded.
But he had even worse hair, as I remember.
Did he? I don't remember.
I remember it being half braided, because he had slightly too long a hair.
Well, I mean, that's all the rage with the kids these days. No, I'm
not. It was offensive. Anyway, so...
Offensive. I mean, there's one picture of him online. I don't know if it's from that fight where he had a streak of blonde hair just going right down the center of his head.
Yeah, that's probably it.
These brothers are a little daring.
So what else have we got this week?
We'll talk about Turiano Johnson, but before that, I totally forgot about the Donnie Nietes card.
What? Donnie Nietes? I didn't even realize he was fighting.
He's fighting on Saturday.
That's brilliant. That's good news.
At the StubHub Center, and I cannot find a way to get tickets.
It's at the StubHub Center.
Yeah, which is, you know, my local venue. And I cannot...
I know, that's just a shame. Why doesn't he fight in the Philippines? Because then it would be on my timeline.
Well, I don't know, but I seriously cannot find tickets for this fight, and I don't even know what time it's starting. I do want to go and see it. I would be willing to miss the Peterson card if I can go see this. I'd rather see Nietes fight. The card is called Filipinos versus the World, but specifically... it says Filipinos versus Latinos. I wonder how I'm going to get tickets to this.
So it's against Juan Alejo, right?
Yeah.
I don't know whether I'm pronouncing that right, but...
No, that's a fine way to pronounce it. You could have done worse. And this is going to go on at the same time that Golovkin's going to go on. What? Talk about poor timing. There's going to be like 8 people there.
Yeah, I don't know. If you're up for watching live boxing, At the StubHub, though, I mean, how many tickets do you need to sell out at the StubHub? 15,000?
Not even. You can sell out maybe 7,000-8,000, and it's sold out.
Okay.
But the problem is you're going against Golovkin.
Yeah.
On his first pay-per-view. Yeah, against Lemieux.
Yeah.
But this is an easy fight for Nietes. The only way he struggles in this fight is that if he doesn't take it seriously. He's fighting a Mexican domestic fighter who's got an impressive record, but if you look at his record, the number of guys with zero wins is a little frightening. And then the number of guys with more losses than wins, also a little interesting. And the Pagara brothers, who are both prospects, are also appearing on the undercard. Albert Pagara, a much better prospect than his brother, still undefeated, only 21 years old, and I think he actually has a future as super bantamweight, as far as maybe someday grabbing a world title.
I know that name. I don't know where from, but
he's got some interesting hair too. And then so Tiriano Johnson versus Iman O'Kane. Tiriano Johnson was this middleweight that, well, I guess he claims that everybody's avoiding him and nobody wants to fight him. But if you don't remember who this guy is, he's the guy that Curtis Stevens stopped in the final round, controversially, on a main events card on NBC Sports Network. That's where you may remember his name. Johnson's good. He does punch hard.
Are you using Curtis Stevens to get into the Golovkin card?
No. No.
Oh, that's
no.
A shame.
I mean, this is on the Golovkin card. The Tiriano Johnson versus Iman O'Kane. Both guys can punch, though.
Okay.
Actually, I take that back. Iman O'Kane can't really punch. He's only got 5 knockouts. And Johnson's 31 years old. So he's got to beat O'Kane and do it impressively if he hopes to grab some big fights before he starts getting too old. And now we're on to Roman Gonzalez versus Brian Belloria. Not Excellent. Really a competitive fight.
No?
No. I mean, have you seen Belloria this past couple of years?
I've seen him once.
And did it look like you were watching a guy who was in peak physical form?
I wouldn't go that far.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't go that far at all. And it's because Brian Belloria, although at one point in his career was very good, is not that guy anymore.
Yeah. No, that's precisely the problem, right?
Exactly. And Gonzalez
It is theoretically a name, but...
Yeah, he's the one name at super flyweight, or flyweight, I mean.
It's a name from a few years ago.
Yeah. Gonzalez blitzes through Belloria easily. If this is competitive at all, it's a little concerning for Gonzalez that his career to this point might have something to do with some clever matchmaking or something, because he should not be struggling against a guy with Brian Belloria. Not at this point.
What has Brian Belloria done recently?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. His last major fight was against Juan Francisco Estrada, right, which he lost.
Clearly lost, although the scorecards won't reflect that.
Yes, yeah, it's a split decision, although the cards are absolutely ridiculous. You got one which is 111-117, one which is 111-116, and then the strange one which is 115-113.
Yeah, the guy who's check red from top rank.
Make of that what you will. But yeah, so his last fight of note is a loss to Estrada. And then after that, you've got, you just need to check out their box Rex Herrera's and Iga Vasquez and Soto. They all have multiple losses.
All right, and this brings us to Golovkin versus Lemieux. Do you think there's any shot for David Lemieux?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
And does it involve a sledgehammer? Does it involve Curtis Stevens coming out from under the ring with the steel chair. What is it going to take for Lemieux to beat Golovkin?
Okay, so I just rewatched Lemieux versus Ndam.
Okay.
Right, and here's the only thing Lemieux can hope for is that Golovkin's head movement remains non-existent. And I personally do not think that is going to happen, but it remains a possibility because we've discussed this before, but we're yet to see Golovkin truly employ all of his boxing skills, I think. And what we're going to find out on, well, for me it's Sunday morning, what we're going to find out is whether he has his boxing skills or not for head movement in such an arena against a power puncher like Lemieux. Personally, I think Golovkin is going to end this relatively quickly, but it's worth tuning in for, and it's worth buying a pay-per-view for, precisely because he could get tagged a few times.
Fine. I think that it's unlikely, but I'd like to see it happen. I'd really like to see Golovkin properly tested. I'd like to see Lemieux push him as far as we've seen Golovkin get pushed before, and that includes, you know, busting Golovkin up a little bit. Murray landed shots, but, you know, was that fight ever in jeopardy? Was Golovkin losing rounds? No. I'd like to see it, you know, 6-3 or something like 5-4 heading into the 10th round. That's the kind of fight that I want to see Golovkin in. And even if it was close like that, you know, where Golovkin gets by 7-5, that doesn't tell us that anything bad about Golovkin. It just means that, you know, he's human. And I think that's what a lot of people want to see, is that Golovkin's human, so that his next fight occurs a little differently. It doesn't occur like Golovkin's going to whitewash whoever they put in with them. But I want to wrap up this conversation on Golovkin versus Lemieux. I really wish Dean was on, because this is a subject that he'd probably be all over. But I wanted to ask you this, all right? So, ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports, we mentioned them earlier, they have signed this deal with WWE Wrestling.
Right.
To start recapping their shows, to start working with them. Meaning, the worldwide leader in sports, ESPN, is now going to start covering and treating fake sports better than it does its boxing, that it airs on its network. How is this possible?
Well, it's a shameful, shameful thing. Unless they're playing Scott Steiner replays all the time.
Well, now, you know, that would be ideal. And in that case, I'm going to, you know, I would say nothing. I could always do with more Scott Steiner. But ESPN covering WWE and probably giving it more time than it does boxing. And I understand that WWE pulls in bigger numbers than boxing. There's no doubt about that. You know, unless save a few PBC episodes that have done some pretty big ratings. But typically, I think a WWE show does somewhere around a 3, and boxing's typically in the 1s. WWE consistently has the top cable shows of the week, ratings-wise. And, you know, ESPN could do well with having the top-rated show on their programming, which I assume is what they're trying to do. They're trying to win the rights to air WWE when their deal goes up. Doesn't WWE air on, like, a reputable sports network in UK?
It will be most likely Sky Sports.
Right, and that's the channel we get boxing. It's the channel we get soccer, right?
Yeah, precisely, yeah.
Okay, and what's the view? Is WWE viewed over there like normal sports?
No, absolutely not. No. It's viewed as a form of entertainment, just like Dancing with the Stars. But it has obviously an element of fighting in it. It's an entertainment thing. It's not a sport.
I have no qualms about WWE. I think, you know...
I'm not saying that either. And I'd also like to point out that...
we're both adamant Scott Steiner fans.
Yeah, Scott Steiner fans, yeah, surely. And Stone Cold as well. But what I'd like to point out is, let's just say that Golovkin absolutely destroys Lemieux. Right? Let's just say that that happens within 3 rounds. That's my prediction. 3 rounds.
Okay.
And, okay, you can quote me on that if you like.
So you think 3 rounds, Golovkin pummels David Lemieux?
Yeah, as I just said, I just watched Lemieux versus Ndam again, and obviously Lemieux, he's a heavy hitter. He's one of the heaviest hitters that I've seen in a while. But I think Golovkin's just going to corner him and kill him. Let me just finish this point.
Go ahead.
Right? And if that happens, okay, there is nothing in the world to stop advertising Golovkin in an almost WWE style, making it accessible to the masses, right, to watch Golovkin. So long as Golovkin continues on a knockout streak, which we can't guarantee whatsoever because of the level of opponent is clearly going to increase with Lemieux. This is a huge step up. And then let's just say he gets Cotto or Canelo, whoever. Well, it's going to be Canelo. But if he gets Canelo afterwards and does the same thing again, there's absolutely nothing to stop making Golovkin a huge name, which you said ESPN, right?
Yep.
A network such as ESPN can advertise in a manner akin to WWE.
But how are they going to do that? You know, is Golovkin going to, they're going to put a backdrop, you know, just a vague backdrop, and Golovkin's just going to cut a promo on all the middleweights out there?
All you need is a 30-second segment of Golovkin's version of English, where it discusses big drama shows.
I think you're right.
This guy is pretty much the most sellable boxer in the last, 10 years, since Pacquiao, maybe.
I don't know. Broner was pretty, for a moment. Broner looked like he was, you know, could have easily been the next thing. And although he was took the opposite,
yeah, but that's completely different because that is completely different because Broner did look like that, and then he got put on his ass twice by Maidana, right?
Correct.
So Golovkin is yet to be put on his ass. If Lemieux knocks Golovkin down twice and wins a decision, then we're talking about a different kettle of fish, right? But if Golovkin is to do what we kind of anticipate, which is to somewhat walk through Lemieux and then move on to bigger and better things, then there's nothing to stop them using Golovkin as a incredible source of financial and media gain for their channel.
All right, well, that's it for this week. Thank you, Tom, for coming on and, you know, calling in from China. I have no clue what time it is for you right now.
It's about 5 a.m., so cheers, Angelo.
Yep. Although you do have somebody in your house, I know. You got friends over, too.
Yeah.
Wink.
That's right.
So, I don't know how you're going to watch the fight, but I do. If it does lag and you can't really watch it, sorry, man. But you did move to China.
Yeah, it's my own fault.
All right, that's it for this week. Rate us on iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes or any other podcast catching. And then you can also send us emails. You can send us Twitter messages or comment on Reddit. Thanks for listening.